Hello, and welcome back to Surgery 101, brought to you with the help of the Department of Surgery at the University of Alberta. As always, we're available on surgery101.org, on the iTunes Music Store, at MedEd Portal, and also at the Canadian Healthcare Education Commons. I'd like to give a brief mention to Dr. Nishan Sharma, who's been a member of our Surgery 101 team for the last couple of years. He's recently relocated from the University of Alberta down to the ward of the 21st century at the University of Calgary, and we wish him all the best. I'm glad to say that he will still be contributing to some of the technical aspects of Surgery 101, so we haven't said goodbye to him completely. Turning to this week's episode now, we'll be hearing from Dr. Darcy Cadou, who's a paediatric urologist here at the University of Alberta, and she'll be talking about a couple of common topics from her own practice. Firstly, she's going to talk about the topic of antenatal hydronephrosis and consider what to do when hydronephrosis shows up on an ultrasound scan before birth. And then she'll talk briefly about one of the causes of antenatal hydronephrosis, which is vesicoureteric reflux. She'll consider what happens in the condition and how it's treated. So, let's get ready for our second visit to the world of paediatric urology here on Surgery 101.
Today I'm going to discuss the investigation and management of antenatal hydronephrosis. I'm going to give you a general introduction, discuss why this topic is important, describe some of the pathophysiology and clinical presentation. I'll also give a brief introduction to the treatment of some of the more common conditions. Antenatal ultrasounds are considered standard of care during pregnancy. As a result, an increasing number of children are being diagnosed before birth with congenital renal anomalies. In fact, renal anomalies are the most common condition diagnosed on antenatal ultrasounds. While there is rarely an indication for in utero treatment of urologic conditions, in severe cases, early termination for life-threatening conditions may be offered. In less severe cases, postnatal management may be altered. It is important for family doctors who do obstetrics to recognize when referral to a specialist is necessary. I'm now going to discuss the pathophysiology of the condition. Hydronephrosis refers to dilation in the renal collecting system. The most common anatomic conditions causing hydronephrosis are ureteropelvic junction obstruction and vesicoureteral reflux. Other less common causes of hydronephrosis include ureterovesical junction obstruction, posterior urethral valves, and ureteroceles. Multicystic dysplastic kidneys can be misdiagnosed as hydronephrosis as well on an antenatal ultrasound. 1% of pregnancies will present with a renal condition. In most cases, the condition is unilateral and does not impact the development or long-term renal function of the child. In obstructive conditions that affect both kidneys, there is a risk of oligohydramnios. This occurs because amniotic fluid is composed of fetal urine. Oligohydramnios can result in malformation of the fetus due to compression and poor lung development.
Let me just jump in for a moment to define that term. Reading from Wikipedia here, every medical student's favorite resource. Oligohydramnios is a condition in pregnancy characterized by a deficiency of amniotic fluid, and it's the opposite of polyhydramnios.
Important features, therefore, to look for on an ultrasound are the fluid level and whether it is a bilateral condition. If the fluid volume is normal and the condition is unilateral, then there should be no change in management, and postnatal evaluation would only start when the child is 4 to 6 weeks of age. In terms of treatment, children diagnosed with antenatal hydronephrosis who have a unilateral condition will only have a renal bladder ultrasound around 4 to 6 weeks of age. This is important because in the first few weeks, urine output may not be high enough to demonstrate the significance of the dilation and conditions may be missed. It is therefore not critical in these mild cases to do an early ultrasound. Children may also have a MAG3 renal scan to determine function and drainage of the kidney, particularly in the setting of a possible UPJ obstruction. A voiding cysturethrogram may also be performed to look for vesicoureteral reflux or in the setting of possible posterior urethral valves. Some physicians will start neonates on antibiotic prophylaxis once a day with amoxil until a diagnosis is made. However, fewer parents are comfortable with this in the absence of urinary tract infections. It is important to explain to parents the importance of a diagnosis of urinary tract infection and the need to take their child to a physician in the setting of a fever. In bilateral severe cases, the infant may require an ultrasound and voiding cysturethrogram in the first few days of life. In particular, if the infant is felt to have posterior urethral valves, a catheter should be placed immediately after birth, and investigation can be delayed until the child is stable. In general, the vast majority of children have mild hydronephrosis and never require any surgical intervention. Surgical intervention would be specific based on the anatomic condition. So in summary, antenatal hydronephrosis is a common condition presenting on pregnancy ultrasounds. The most common conditions diagnosed are UPJ obstruction and vesicoureteral reflux. Both of these rarely impact the development and long-term function of the child. In the setting of normal fluid volume, pregnancies should be carried to full term, and there is no rush to investigate. Pregnancies with bilateral conditions or low fluid volume may require intervention and should be referred to a maternal fetal medicine specialist.
Okay, so that's enough on our first topic, antenatal hydronephrosis. Let's move on to our second topic now, vesicoureteric reflux. Take it away, Dr. Kadu.
Vesicoureteral reflux is a common pediatric urologic condition. It can present during an antenatal ultrasound with hydronephrosis, with the evaluation of a febrile urinary tract infection, or as a result of investigation for bladder dysfunction. If it is unrecognized in the setting of kidney infections or with significant bladder dysfunction, the kidneys may sustain damage which could result in high blood pressure or ultimately renal failure. With vesicoureteral reflux, urine travels from the bladder back up to the kidney. Children can be born with this condition and never have a problem. It has a very strong genetic basis and is found in approximately 40% of siblings. Vesicoureteral reflux can occur primarily as a result of an embryologic abnormality of the insertion of the ureter. It can also occur secondarily due to increased bladder pressure in the setting of neurologic impairment of the bladder or in children who have difficulties with infrequent voiding and constipation. In terms of treatment, if there is a suspicion of vesicoureteral reflux due to antenatal hydronephrosis, physicians may simply follow without intervention unless there is a urinary tract infection. If children have urinary tract infections, particularly episodes of pyelonephritis, avoiding cysturethrogram is performed to determine whether there is reflux. A nuclear medicine DMSA scan may be performed in the acute setting to determine if there's an active pyelonephritis or in follow-up to determine whether there is scarring. This may help you to decide on whether the child will ultimately need surgical intervention. If the VCUG is positive, children are often placed on antibiotic prophylaxis and given instructions on healthy bladder and bowel habits. If children have breakthrough infections on antibiotic prophylaxis, then vesicoureteral reflux can be surgically corrected by an injection of a bulking substance at the ureteric orifice or with an open surgery that moves the ureter through the bladder muscle wall. So in summary, vesicoureteral reflux is a common condition which may or may not be harmful for children. Those children who have reflux in the setting of urinary tract infections should be placed on antibiotic prophylaxis. Surgery should be considered for failures. It is important to ensure children are practicing healthy bladder and bowel habits along with a specific treatment for vesicoureteral reflux.
So, there we have it. A basic guide to a couple of important topics in pediatric urology in 10 minutes or less. We hope you enjoyed this podcast and find it useful. As always, if you have comments or questions about this podcast or suggestions for other podcasts in the future, please let us know at surgerypodcast@gmail.com or leave us a comment at surgery101.org. That's all for this week, and see you again next time around back on Surgery 101.